League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Five the Ticket. Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot to right is 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The Tigers hit it.
This 106.5 The Ticket sports exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Matthews got it, throws. He's got Golden Tate who makes the catch. Inside the 15, inside the 10, and he's biking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags, start the plane. This game is over. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Get ready. It's now drive time.
Sweeping left side, 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots a score. Blocked the shot, sent Gretzky in, 3-0, Los Angeles. Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it! DeMarco! 15 feet, 4 inches, center of cup, President's Cup to the United States.
ESPN 106.5, The Ticket is the radio channel. Drive Time with Mike Miller is the name of the radio program. As I welcome you on this Wednesday afternoon, the 24th day of May, the year 2017, Nick Fratella sitting in for Mike Miller, who is addressing an obligation with the O Show up in Ontario, that being the Ontario Hockey League and the Memorial Cup. Therefore, giving myself, again, Nick Fratella, your host today, the opportunity to sit behind the mic broadcasting live from the Sylvania Tam-O-Shanter Loft Restaurant. It was last Thursday when I was last on the air broadcasting live from the Toledo Speedway Bar and Grill in light of the Menards 200 representing the Arcus Racing Series. And as a matter of fact, in case you missed it, Dalton Sargent, whom we had on the show, was leading with about 8 laps to go and then had it taken away by Harrison Burton, who ended up claiming his first victory at the Menards 200 at the Toledo Speedway. So that was a fun weekend for racing fans, and here we are the following week with just as much excitement, not as much in the racing field, but of course with the NHL playoffs really starting to heat up with yet another Game 7 coming our way tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Great program for Hockey Talk, not only this one, but the one to follow, that being Face Off, the hockey show in its 19th season. Great guests on tap for that at 6:15, Robbie Stanley, one who covers the Nashville Predators on NHL.com, is going to be joining me. Also at 6:35, Joe Girardin, NHL correspondent for the Buffalo Sabres. He's going to help us look ahead to Game 7 and recap everything that's gone on in about the past month or so as far as the NHL playoffs is concerned. But I will be addressing a little NHL talk here to follow, but just wanted to start off with a little something. Oh, by the way, Frank Gorgano's back at the studio pressing the buttons. He's the fine producer of this radio program. And once again, Face Off, the hockey show to follow. Frank's going to be with us for that as well. But before we get into the NHL playoffs, we are going to be talking some C's, Cavs, Eastern Conference Final. The Golden State Warriors are still sitting on their couch waiting for that to finish up. Cavaliers are going to have an opportunity to close it out tomorrow night in Beantown. Game 5, obviously, collected series win number 3 last night after a really poor first half. Great first half by Boston. Poor first half by the Cavaliers. Minus LeBron James, obviously committing his fourth foul, put him in a bad position to not get the playing time that not only that he deserves, but really that the Cavs needed to get a jump start, because myself included, but also many Cavaliers fans were maybe a little suspect of what Kyrie Irving could do for this ball club with the whole team on his back. And with Love and even LeBron at times on his back and Tristan Thompson and others, Kyrie Irving got the job done last night, especially in the second half, putting up a playoff career high of 42 points and giving the Cavaliers, again, that oh-so-important third victory in the series, giving themselves a commanding 3-1 series lead heading back to Beantown. So we're going to dive right into C's Cavs to get the program started today. After our first break, which is coming our way in about 5 minutes, Brian Robb from Boston.com is going to be joining us to talk not only about this series and what the Cavaliers have to bring to the table to the Golden State Warriors, because as I said a week ago, as I said several weeks ago, and as just about everybody said at the beginning of the season, barring a significant injury, we are going to get, for the third year in a row, a Golden State Warrior Boston Celtics NBA, or excuse me, Golden State Warrior Cleveland Cavalier NBA final, and that's exactly what's going to happen. So Brian Robb certainly going to help us look ahead to that, but also going to give us a little feel for what the Celtics have ahead of themselves, of course, now having the #1 pick to look forward to. And look, they're playing basketball without Isaiah Thomas right now, and although the 48 minutes have not been in the same game, the Celtics have put together back-to-back halves of really good basketball, that being the second half in game #3, a game that they collected their first win of the series in Cleveland, and followed it up with a magnificent first half in game #4. Nothing to prevail, but they did show that they can ball without their leader, Isaiah Thomas, who is out with a hip injury for the rest of the postseason. So we're going to get into what the future holds for the Boston Celtics as well with Brian Robb. And then coming our way at 5:35, we're going to dive into the MLB topic, and that being the Detroit Tigers. And look, they're plummeting fast right now, are the Detroit Tigers, and we have a lot to get into. I'm really curious if a lot of people still care about how this team is doing. You know, it was really kind of wait-and-see mode after they decided not to demolish everything that this franchise has to offer, that being Justin Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, Ian Kinsler, and others. They decided to go yet another year above the luxury tax threshold, and now a year away from being severely penalized for being over the luxury tax threshold in 2018, being that it's the third consecutive year, puts themselves in a really, really tough situation, not only with what the team has to put on the field right here and right now, but also future compensation for guys that will most likely be traded. Guy by the name of J.D. Martinez is the first that comes to mind if this team is not in serious contention come early July. So we're going to dive into many facets of what the Detroit Tigers conversation has to offer right here, right now, on the 24th day of May, 2017. But let's get right back into the NHL playoffs. This is a huge topic, and with how wide open the NHL playoffs is year in and year out, we have so many headlines to really ponder going into this postseason. Of course, Pittsburgh, you know, it's the same topic every year, talking about the defending Stanley Cup champ. Will they go back-to-back? It has not been done since the Red Wings did it in 97 and 98. We know they have the core to do it. Malkin, Crosby, you know it. Letang, although he was injured and is not going to be back anytime soon, won't even be skating late this summer. It's going to be training camp when Letang makes an appearance on the practice ice for the Penguins. But you know the drill. You've seen these guys on the ice in championship form before, and here they are with a Game 7 ahead. Opportunity to do something that hasn't been done in about 20 years, that being back-to-back Stanley Cup champs. So that was really one of the bigger headlines. What might have been the biggest headline was the Washington Capitals, of course, in that put-up-or-shut-up mode, the opportunity to finally get over the hump with the tandem of Backstrom and Ovechkin and the goaltender Holtby and Orpik and Oshie and others. They couldn't do it with Barry Trotz at the helm, so another year, another failure for the Washington Capitals, although it may have been a bit overshadowed given the stupid playoff structure that the NHL has to offer, which, look, a lot of people look down on the second-round elimination for the Washington Capitals, but it's pretty tough to judge when you have the two best teams, really, in the Eastern Conference Finals facing off in the Eastern Conference Semifinal, but they were the two best teams in the regular season in the Eastern Conference. It just so happened that the Caps and the Pens were in the Metropolitan Division. Oh, by the way, the Blue Jackets are right up there as well. So that was a big headline. And then the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, that's one reason why everyone thought the Capitals maybe could get over the hump, because of that first big test that they got from a young, pesky, gritty Toronto Maple Leafs team led by Mike Babcock and Austin Matthews. They made a name for themselves. And what's never an never-ending storyline in the NHL is the Anaheim Ducks. Yeah, I guess they took another step forward, but it wasn't good enough. And you thought maybe after getting rid of Boudreaux, oh, by the way, who still can't get out of the first round, he had an opportunity to do so in Minnesota, couldn't do it. You bring back Carlisle, who gave him a Stanley Cup berth and title in 2006, I think it was. You bring him around for a second stint. Yeah, they win a Game 7. I guess that's considered taking a step forward for a franchise that could never get the job done in a Game 7, especially on home ice. Well, they did it the first time. Well, they didn't even get themselves to a Game 7 against Nashville. Nashville took care of business on home ice in Game 6, and that's exactly where we create the next story and the next big headline and what probably overcomes all of those that I just mentioned, and that is the Nashville Predators, a team that was on the brink of extinction, I believe, 9 to 10 years ago. We're going to dive right into that with Robbie Stanley coming up at 6:15 on Face Off the Hockey Show, but you get the picture. Nashville, not an ideal NHL traditional hockey community when they came to the league in 98, and here they are just less than 20 years later representing the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Final after being seeded as the 16th best, I guess you want to call them the regular 16th best regular season team in the NHL. And here they are. They take down Chicago in round one. Chicago, they played a lot of hockey over the years, you know, game seven after game seven, cup final after cup final. If you pay attention at all to hockey, you know what the Chicago Blackhawks have done since the year 2010. So after all the hockey they played, I guess you can give them a mulligan, if you will, after dropping one in the first round. But you thought that was going to be the toughest test. But after Pete LaViolette and company take care of Chicago, then they get tough business, and then, of course, that brings them to the Western Conference Final against the Anaheim Ducks, who were not an easy out. And next thing you know, Getzlaff is held without a goal. The defense is taking advantage. The really good young defensive core that Anaheim has to bring to the table is taken advantage of by the Nashville Predators, and here they are waiting for the winner of Game 7, Pittsburgh and Ottawa, to face off, to see who they will face off against in the Stanley Cup Final. Third playoff series win this year for the Nashville Predators. Make that number 6 in franchise history. Think about that. The Predators have won 3, count them 3, playoff series victories going into the year 2017-2018, which is just a magnificent accomplishment, yes, but it's just something to think about when you consider that you can call it a brief history of this franchise, but what they have done this year has been nothing short of sensational, going to their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. So that is certainly the number one storyline after everything we had to dissect and ponder and look over going into the postseason. Well, here we are, the 16th-seeded Nashville Predators representing the Western Conference and now waiting again tomorrow night, 8 p.m. puck drop, for the winner between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Ottawa Senators. That game in Pittsburgh going to be interesting. A lot of people have Pittsburgh winning Game 7. I do not, given this really the same reason why the Blackhawks were in the position they found themselves in. After all the hockey, grueling, grit, Game 7, number 2 for Pittsburgh this year. They've been there and done that year in and year out. It's not like this team has had short seasons in the past. They've been there all the time with this core that's not even aging yet, which is hard to believe because they've been around for so long, but they look ageless, those Crosby and Malkin on the ice together. But here they are yet again in another Game 7. So that's going to cap off the monologue. We're going to keep the train rolling right after these words brought to you here on 106.5 The Ticket. This program brought to you by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Visit the Monroe Superstore today to find a great new deal on a new or used car. Coming back right after these words.
The Detroit. Talking local sports, it's Drive Time on Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
Program broadcasting live from the Sylvania Tam O'Shanter Loft. Nick Swatala sitting in for Mike Miller this evening as he's up in Ontario for the Ontario Hockey League Memorial Cup. Pleasure to have you with us here on this Wednesday afternoon, early evening, late afternoon, that is, 24th day of May, 2017. Just got done with the monologue, recapping of what's been going on in the NHL playoffs. And what's also going on is, although we're still a little bit away from the inevitable Cavaliers-Warriors NBA Final rematch number 3, we're going to talk to Brian Robb. He's from the he writes for Boston.com, and this conversation with Brian is brought to you by Vito's Pizza, ingredients that you can trust. Order by phone at any of the 20 Vito's Pizza's locations or online at Vito's.com. Brian, thanks so much for joining the program. Brian, of course, a contributor to the Sports Hub on 98.5, co-host of the Big 3 podcast, and again, a reporter for Boston.com. Thanks again for joining us. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, a ton to discuss, whether it pertains to the future of the Boston Celtics, as far as what's happened throughout the season with what they got out of Isaiah Thomas. But let's start with this series. Based on the deplorable effort you saw in Game 1 and 2, what did you see out of the Celtics team to start that may have surprised you a little bit, whether it's the second half of Game 3 that ended up in a victory or the first half that you saw last night before things went south thanks to Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, I mean, clearly no one thought this series would be coming back to Boston after Game 4, given the way that the Celtics performed in Boston those first two games. When you factor in Isaiah Thomas being out for this series as well, the Celtics, you know, any Eastern Conference team has had, you know, an incredibly tough time getting any kind of win against the Cavs, much less winning in Cleveland. But what they did show in those last two games is they showed a little more pride than, you know, clearly they weren't, you know, they're embarrassed by what happened to them, by what the Cavs did in those first two games. And obviously put together, you know, six strong quarters there, whether it was, you know, hanging tough in the first half of Game 3, obviously the impressive comeback at the end of Game 3, and then, you know, putting a scare into the Cavs for the first half of Game 4. Clearly, you know, Irving and LeBron took it to another level to close things out in Game 4, but all things considered, it was, you know, I think Boston fans around here, they're pretty happy just with the effort that they gave, given how shorthanded they were.
Talking to Brian Robb here from Boston.com. Brian, I do want to get your take on what this Cavaliers team can bring to the table to a third opportunity to capture an NBA title. They did so last year, of course, but that being the predetermined final, if you will, against the Golden State Warriors. But first, I want to go over something with you. We're talking about the past two games the Celtics have played, both of which without Isaiah Thomas. Can it possibly be considered a blessing in disguise for the Celtics team that probably wasn't going to win anyway with Thomas on the court, and now they have an opportunity to get a glimpse at who's going to be here in the future, perhaps with or without IT, given the draft picks that they have, thanks to the guys over at Brooklyn that run the Brooklyn organization, have no idea what they're doing. You get the first-round pick, the first overall pick this year, probably the first overall pick next year because they're not supposed to be any better. Looking at a guy like Avery Bradley's play, looking at him, does it kind of feel like a blessing in disguise that you get to see a little bit more of these players without IT?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point because I do think that issue kind of factored into the decision of why the team shut Isaiah down. Clearly, he was laboring in those first two games. He was, if anything, you know, a negative on the team's performance, even on the offensive end. We all know about his liabilities on the defensive end. So, hey, you know, this is an injury that could get worse. So instead of, you know, throwing him out there for what would inevitably be a series loss, let's, you know, try to reform our identity a little bit from these couple games, get the expanded look at the younger guys, which again, with, as you mentioned, with the team having a lot of big decisions to make this offseason, both in terms of who they want to build around in the future and what guys they want to, you know, pay big money to that are part of the team's current core, seeing people in expanded spots, expanded roles like Avery Bradley, like Marcus Smart, like some of the younger guys such as Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, that I think when you look back at this series in the offseason will probably be one of the biggest pluses from the C's front office point of view.
Talking to Brian Robb, staying on that same topic, Brian, I think I took a peek at a piece of your work, I think maybe just under a month ago. I think you were certainly an advocate for acquiring somebody this year, right here, right now at the trade deadline with all that the future compensation that the Celtics and Danny Ainge have to offer. Were you looking at trade possibilities this year, or were you in fact okay with hanging on to really with a farm full of you know, future assets that can be dealt for a superstar down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think what the Celtics are looking at, it makes sense for this year that they obviously didn't do anything. I think this is, they've kind of hit their ceiling in terms of where this team could have gone with or without a big acquisition. I don't think they could have really done anything in season to get them past the Cavs, and I think we all know that this series is probably going to come to an end. If not in Thursday, it'll be back in Saturday in Game 6. But I am of the mind that for the team's future, they are in a better position where they've to kind of go for it now. The next two or three seasons, because you have Al Horford now. He's 31 years old. You have Isaiah Thomas probably right in the middle of his prime, and you have the unique collection of assets to put a third or potentially even fourth star around them, you know, if someone like Markel Fultz develops, if they keep that pick. So you have these timelines that you need to match up, and if you wait too long and you don't use, you know, cash in your assets for a big piece, then you might be in a situation where you have the young guys blossoming, but at that point, you know, Al Horford might be over the hill and Isaiah Thomas might be in his, you know, the mid-30s and not have that first step anymore. Exactly. So they have to figure out where the best way to go about it is. In my mind is you kind of go for the sure thing over waiting for all these younger guys to develop, which might take, you know, years upon years.
Mm-hmm. Certainly probably the best case scenario. You just mentioned Isaiah Thomas's name. You know it better than anybody. It's so easy to create a headline. Well, one headline that I've seen browsing along the web is Celtics writers or those who follow the team closely are suggesting that the team has a better future without Isaiah Thomas. I think that's asinine, but I get the theory, I suppose. He's going to want $130 million, this being the first year eligible, well, after the 2018 season, that is. He's going to get that $130 million deal from somebody. He's 5'9", liability on defense, had an MVP-caliber season, showed he could ball and overcame, I don't want to say overcame, but dealt with the tragic loss of his sister. What's your stance on keeping Isaiah Thomas and giving him that max contract and essentially building around him, whether it's him and Markel Fultz, 1 and 2, or trading the number one pick, who presumably Fultz, to another team down the road?
Yeah, I don't think, barring a huge, you know, blockbuster deal, I don't think they're going to move that number one pick, even for a guy like Paul George or something like that. I just don't think that the certainty you have from the number one pick, that number one pick, with a guy like Fultz, and the fact you have control over him for the first, you know, 7 or 8 years of his career, when you factor in restricted free agency, I think that's too much of a layer for the Celtics to give up.
You think Fultz and Thomas can work together?
I think it's worth finding out. I don't think it's a sure thing by any means, but there's no risk this next year, because Isaiah Thomas is still on a great contract, making, you know, I think around $6.5 million a year before you have to make a decision on that big contract. And to be honest, I don't think, you know, even if the Celtics decided, hey, let's, you know, we're not sure if we want to give him the big deal or not, I don't think they would get a return in a trade if they decided to move on from him that would make it worth moving him, given what he gives to the team, you know, obviously averaging over 28 points per year. Mm-hmm. The point guard position around the league is a very deep one. The playoff teams that would be looking to win now, you know, a lot of them already have great point guards, where Isaiah Thomas wouldn't necessarily be a huge upgrade for them. Give up a lot of assets. So I'm of the mind that Celtics should kind of wait it out with them, see how those two guys look together, and then can make a more informed decision next summer and potentially hope, you know, maybe try to get Isaiah Thomas on some kind of a, you know, a little bit of discount, a little bit less than the max, because while I think he can get a max contract somewhere, I'm not sure he's going to be able to get a max contract from a playoff team, and that's, for a guy who's very competitive, I'm not sure what he's going to prioritize more.
Okay, so yeah, you think although the NBA is all about overpaying people for their original value, you think the hometown discount could very well be in order, especially for Isaiah Thomas, who certainly has almost made himself a little Boston legend, especially after that 53-point performance against Washington. Talking to Brian Robb here. Brian, I'm going to let you go on this. As you might know, we're in Cavalier country here, so it's only necessary, more than necessary, if I ask you this question. You've got a glimpse of what this Cavaliers team can do when their back's against the wall, that being without LeBron in the second quarter. Cavaliers outscore the Celtics when the Celtics are hot in the second quarter last night with LeBron on the bench, which I was really surprised by. Looking at what Kyrie Irving did, looking at what the role players have done at times, not all the time, but at times throughout the season, what kind of chance do you give the Cavaliers against the Golden State Warriors in the final?
I mean, I think the Cavs in that series, I don't think it's a complete toss-up, but I think the Warriors should be favored, as they will be, obviously. But Irving, to me, is a huge difference maker offensively. We saw it last night. We saw it, I think, you know, in the last three games of last year's finals as well. The Warriors don't have an answer for him either. And last night he was taking Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, two of the best one-on-one guard defenders in the league, and, you know, tearing them to shreds. And that's the kind of thing that when you factor that in with LeBron, Kevin Love, I feel like, is playing some of the best basketball of his career since he's joined the Cavs. And you factor that together, and I think they have a chance against everyone. It's going to, you know, I expect an all-out war in the series, a 6 or 7 game series, and it's just a matter, I think, if you know, LeBron has to be on the entire series. He can't have a hiccup like game three in the first half of game four like we saw against the Celtics in these last two games. He needs to be on for them to kind of go toe-to-toe for the Warriors, but I think you guys are in for a real fun ride, and I'm excited to see a really competitive series here after a pretty lackluster last couple rounds.
Magnificent point, especially about LeBron. Cannot take one game off. Brian Robb here joining us from Boston.com. Brian, thanks so much for the time. You're doing a great job. Keep up the great work, and we'll stay in touch.
All right, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, Brian. Again, that's Brian Robb from Boston.com, also a contributor to the Sports Hub on 98.5, also a co-host on the Big 3 podcast. Brought up a ton of great points. I happen to be with him on just about all of them, especially probably the biggest toss-up question for the Celtics, whether or not to attack the future with Thomas and the quote-unquote do-it-all point guard, that being Markelle Fultz, who's probably the inevitable number one pick out of Washington. Probably a guy that can blossom as a little bit better of a defender than Thomas, but because of what Thomas has done and what he can do on the offensive side of the floor, certainly could be one of the better, if not the best, 1-2 punch in the NBA. Like Brian said, a couple years down the road, which is a big reason why Danny Ainge did not pull the trigger at the trade deadline for a guy like Paul George or Carmelo Anthony with that number one pick and even the 2018 number one pick that they have, because Mikhail Prokhorov and those of whom who run the Nets organization, as mentioned before, have absolutely positively no idea what they're doing. And that's why the Celtics are in a great position, and that's why Brian Robb had the opportunity to join us today, and we thank him for that. Coming up, we're going to be talking Detroit Tigers baseball. That wraps up the NBA talk for this segment on Drive Time, always brought to you by the Low Payment King. His name is Ralph Mahalik. We're going to take a short break. Sports, weather, coming to you by Tats Electronics. Also a traffic update brought to you by Super Fitness. Hop online, visit Super Fitness Toledo. That might start to what can be considered a two-hour program today. Drive Time, brought to you by Ralph Mahalik, the Low Payment King at the Monroe Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Superstore, 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to follow his face-off the hockey show. So 2 hours worth of sports talk radio here on this Wednesday afternoon, 20 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm Nick Switala sitting in for Mike Miller. It's been a great show thus far. Touched on the NHL playoffs. Going to conclude with a little, I'm going to throw a little curveball at the listening audience regarding the Game 7 tomorrow, but we have already discussed a little bit about what the Nashville Predators have done and what that means to the organization that really was plummeting just a decade ago, and it's just magnificent for the franchise and for the hockey community there in Tennessee, for the Predators to be heading to the Stanley Cup Final for the very first time. And following that, Brian Robb joined us from Boston.com to talk Celtics-Cavs, and that was a great conversation, talking the future of the Celtics and whether or not the Cavaliers really do have a great shot to beat the Golden State Warriors based off of not only LeBron's majestic moments throughout his playoff career, but what Kyrie Irving did last night, which was just superb, really from the second quarter on, telling his fan base, his family, his friends that it doesn't have to be a one-man show. LeBron has to show up, but Kyrie Irving, certainly an integral part of this postseason run for the Cleveland Cavaliers, although it's been a little bit of a cakewalk thus far, not going to be that way against the Golden State Warriors. Hey, real quick, before we get into the baseball talk, that being the Detroit Tigers report, brought to you, as always, by the Reap Funeral Home. We do have two pairs of Mud Hens tickets to give away. The game this Friday, 7 p.m., first pitch against Wilkes-Barre. Callers 2 and 3 get granted the tickets. Hop on the phone and dial 866-240-1065. That's 866-240-1065. Again, two pairs of Mud Hens tickets this Friday night, 7 p.m. against Wilkes-Barre, 866-240-1065. Callers 2 and 3 get the tickets. So that's the start. Speaking of the Mud Hens, Anibal Sanchez got the start last night, and not much has changed for Sanchez. It doesn't matter if he's in Detroit or Toledo, or I don't think anything would be much different if he was pitching in the Little League Park. Getting shelled again, small sample size last night, but got shelled again, two home runs. Things are really looking like a buyout there for Anibal Sanchez, because you don't know what his situation is as far as wanting a release, because of the compensation aspect of it. He's due a ton of money. It's been a disaster. You thought worst case scenario he could be a adequate middle relief, long relief pitcher. That didn't work out, and now he's in Toledo getting shelled. So there's that for the Mud Hens. Free tickets and Anibal talk. Again, leading up to the Detroit Tigers report, brought to you, as always, by Reap Funeral Home. And for the next few minutes, I want to dive right into this Detroit Tigers team. AL Central has been a popular subject since really spring training, because it was myself that sat behind the mic just not even a couple of months ago that said that this division is going to be very, very tight throughout the entirety of the 2017 MLB season. And although it still is, eyebrows are starting to raise, jaws are even starting to drop on how poor this Tigers team has played. And I guess the best sample of that would be the past two games in Houston, where everybody not named Mikey Mattsuk has not done a single thing at the plate. And the pitching has been hit or miss. The bullpen woes really aren't the major concern right now, believe it or not, ever since Frankie Rodriguez has been dismissed of his closing duties, and again, Anibal Sanchez being out of the mix. But there's still plenty of worry with the Tigers, and I wanted all of you that really have a strong opinion on this to get involved on Twitter, at @Nicholas_Sweat is the Twitter handle here, to really give me your input. Tigers 21-23 on the season. I think they've lost 13 games on the road. They haven't won four games in a row all year. I think they've won three in a row a couple times, but have not won four in a row all year. And tonight they play the third game of a four-game set in Houston. I think it's Norris versus Borton. So there's a good opportunity to win tonight. Four-game set, can split it, best-case scenario, because they dropped the first two. They sit 4.5 games back in Minnesota, and I'm done telling you everything you already probably know. I want to know how many people really care about this baseball team right now. How many people are actually excited? Myself, this is the first time where I've gone the first 40-some-odd games in the regular season where I haven't even attempted to go to a game. Haven't even attempted. Now, I also admit that I've accepted the fact that early July is the first finish line, quote-unquote, for this baseball team. And what I mean by that is it's just wait-and-see mode, ladies and gentlemen. I know 21-23 looks terrible. I know Miguel Cabrera has been awful, and his body's starting to get banged up, and there's some real concern whether he's going to be in contention for the hitting crown, or is he going to be the, you know, top three slugger year in and year out? Probably not. I know there's concern over it, though. I know Justin Verlander, because of those oh-so-often two or three starts where he just gets bombed, that kills the ERA, you wonder if he's going to be a Cy Young-caliber pitcher again. I know all those questions exist, but I really want to know how many people are actually excited about this baseball team. How many people care? How many people pay attention? How many people log on to the first couple innings of the West Coast trip and see how they're doing when they were struggling on that on the trip where, you know, they lost the first two or three to the Oakland Athletics because of Rodriguez blowing the games? The next thing you know, it just seems like people don't care. Well, we know that Al Avila had an opportunity to ship Ian Kinsler, maybe Miguel Cabrera. Not many people probably even going to consider taking that contract, but he's in the basket full of players that were probably in consideration to trade, to blow this thing up. And then Justin Verlander, after the year he had last year, his contract doesn't look so bad at the time, last winter. But Al Avila chose to roll with what they got, and they couldn't add on to a team that's already crossed over the luxury tax threshold for the second year in a row. And it just so happens that that team is filled with a aging core of players. I'm not saying people don't care about the team, like that they stop liking them, disowning them, but all I'm saying is I really just want to see where this team is late June, because I said it once and I'll say it again, Cleveland Indians aren't winning 100 games this year. I just don't see it happening. It's a little different with this Cleveland franchise. Not only, I hate to go based off history, but it's a little easier for this Cleveland Indians team to kind of come out of the Woodstock and show themselves and get their way to the World Series, as opposed to having a target on their back, finally spending some money, attracting the baseball community for the first time for a full year, really, since the 97-98 glory days, if you will, when it was a baseball town. And although it's not a baseball town right now, I just don't see this Indians team, although I think they're going to win the division, I think they're still not safe money, but money worthy putting on for the World Series championship this year. I don't see them running away with this division, and I certainly don't see a Minnesota Twins team led by who is it, Irvin Santana, that's having like a career year at age 50. I don't see the Twins holding up this year. It's not going to take much, folks, and the reason why I wasn't against this team not getting blown up in the off season was because of my fanhood. But when you take into careful consideration, you have to find reasons why it's okay not to blow it up. And I think this division, including all the parity that it has, and that bearing major injury to the Tigers, which they've already experienced with going 25-30 games without Cabrera and J.D. Martinez in the lineup, you know, you see what Cleveland's going through with their rotation struggles, and especially the back end with Tomlin and Bauer, it's not working out. But you got to rely on Salazar and Carrasco to stay healthy. And speaking of Cy Young, returning to Cy Young form, how about Corey Kluber? How about Edwin Encarnacion, although I think he'll turn it around? Look, there's question marks all over this division. All over this division. I mean, the Twins have a manager that nobody believed in 3 months ago, but here they are, 4.5-game lead on the Tigers, 3.5, I believe, on the Indians. This division's nowhere near set in stone, and because it's baseball, I think people really tend to forget what the Dodgers did in 88 against the Oakland A's. Against the Oakland A's that, like, it seemed as if they won all 150, 160 some odd games. People seem to forget about what the Cardinals did in 83 and 78 in 2006 against the same Tigers, the Tigers team we're talking about. What the Florida Marlins did in 03 and 97 against the Cleveland Indians. Underdogs can win in the MLB. Can't happen in the NBA. Can happen in the NHL and can happen in baseball. Cannot happen in the NBA. Really can't happen in football. We've seen it, but not so often. And regarding the Tigers this season, I wouldn't call it a disaster, but although I'm totally in favor of being in wait-and-see mode and getting them to early July, late June, seeing how things shape up, hopefully they can stay healthy. You're getting no production from Castellanos, who showed signs of having a breakout year before he got banged up last season. You expect Cabrera to get back in the form, but will he? I don't know. Victor Martinez is on the downhill schneid, only batting 270, no power. Justin Upton, typical Justin Upton, fooling everybody in the first month or at least 1 month out of the season and disappears, goes into a coma for the next month. There's a lot of things that still have to shape up for the Detroit Tigers team, and although I'm not confident, I'm still going to stick to the word that says they're going to sneak into a second wild card. They're certainly not going to be even thinking about adding anybody to trade deadline. I don't know how they can. Because, again, as I mentioned in the monologue, they got a guy, J.D. Martinez, on the team that they probably are going to have to ship one way or another. And with that being said, because of them being over the luxury tax threshold, the Tigers are looking at paying a severe, severe penalty in 2018. And look, money's money. I get that the Ilitch family is, it might not be much of an object as far as some facets of life are concerned. But when it comes to baseball and you have a $200 million payroll, what's 50% of $200 million? That's what the Tigers are going to be looking at in year three of crossing the luxury tax threshold. So there is a lot of questions to answer for this baseball team, and it goes far, far, far beyond of people panicking just a little bit too much of being 21 and 23 in a division that features the Minnesota Twinkies at 24 wins leading the pack and the Cleveland Indians team that their fans will tell you, the fans that know baseball will at least, they're underachieving themselves. So that's all I got for the Detroit Tigers. As always, brought to you by Reed Funeral Home. Again, Tigers... back in action tonight, Norris Burton versus Morton should be a good one, a one they can win. And if they get this one tonight, then they got Justin Verlander to follow, looking for another bounce-back outing is Justin Verlander, and hopefully get a split out of the series. And oh, by the way, Houston, best team in baseball right now. Magnificent club. They did just get swept by Cleveland. Cleveland got the bats going and put together three solid games, but it was almost as if Houston was due to lose. So it would be really, really, really admirable if this Detroit Tigers team can get something going tonight. And again, I know Memorial Day's here. I know June's right around the corner, but it's wait and see mode because that's what we signed up for as Tigers fans, to accept the fact that Al Avila and company did not blow this thing up. Nick Swithalis sitting in for Mike Miller live from the loft at Tam O'Shanter. This is Drive Time, brought to you by Ralph Maholik. He is the low payment king. Go on up to the Monroe Superstore, get yourself a fine deal on a new or used car.
More of the best in local sports talk. It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wrapping things up here on program number one of two, Drive Time, brought to you by the Low Payment King, Ralph Maholik, Monroe Superstore. Go up there and get yourself a deal. Great show so far. Thanks so much to Brian Robb from Boston.com, talking Celtics, Cavs, and what the future holds for the Boston Celtics, whether that includes Isaiah Thomas, Markelle Fultz and company. So many options. tough situation to be in, but certainly not a bad one if you think about it, given the number one pick that they have this year and the follow this year. And, oh, by the way, Game 7, as I mentioned, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. puck drop. Ottawa Senators are going to win that game, folks. Penguins have played a ton of hockey, not just this year, but over the years. Game 6 was the game that they had to win. They outplayed Ottawa. They outshot them, but it was Craig Anderson at age 90. 95, something like that, coming up big with 47 saves, and the Ottawa Senators force a Game 7 in front of a crowd that didn't even sell out, believe it or not. But that, in my mind, was the game that the Penguins had to win, and they didn't get the job done, and now they got to go back home. Already played a Game 7 once. It's going to be tough to win another one. I know I think they got them at minus 200 to win Game 7, but that's where the money is made in Vegas, folks. Ottawa Senators win Game 7 and face off against the Nashville Predators in the Stanley Cup Final. Again, thanks to Brian Robb. He was the only guest for this program. Face off the hockey show to follow. We have Robbie Stanley and Joe Yerden coming our way to talk more hockey, more playoffs, more sports, more life. Nick Switala sitting in for Mike Miller. Talk to you in a few.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.